Welcome to the Visible Policing Podcast, where we explore the nature and impact of the visual in relation to contemporary crime and policing.
Hello, I'm Liam Ralph, Research Fellow at Northumbria University, and for this episode I'm speaking with Professor Mike Crowe about the Visible Policing Project. So, Mike, just to start off with, do you want to tell me a little bit about the project and how it came about?
Yeah, I suppose the purpose of the project is predominantly to look at the impact of visual components of policing on public perceptions and police perceptions of their role and their status within society. There's a good deal of talk in public debate, newspaper debate, political debate and so on about visible policing, but that's normally around the impact of foot patrol and the visible presence of police officers on the street. That's an important issue, but we want to look at visual policing in much broader terms, to think about the impact of police buildings and property and police uniforms and police cars and the kind of material culture of policing, but also the visual presence of police on social media, and to begin to think about all of those issues in terms of the legitimacy of the police, public trust and confidence, how the public interpret the role of the police, but as I said, also to think about ways in which police officers themselves understand their role in society and their occupational identity. So it's quite a multifaceted approach, really.
So it was interesting you started off there just by thinking about foot patrol. Why do you think most of the kind of our understanding is based on foot patrol then and not these other things?
Good question. I mean, it does seem a bit, I mean, you know, when Andrew and Matt and I began to develop the project, we did sort of wonder, you know, it does seem to be a gap really in terms of the research literature, that there hasn't been much attention. There has been some, but there hasn't been much attention focused on this issue. And I suppose the politics of policing in Britain, at least over the recent past, has been focused on numbers. It's focused on getting, you know, police officers on the beat, on patrol, and, you know, I think many of us are aware that that's been a problematic debate in many respects, because the impact that has in terms of crime detection, for example, might not be very great. It might have an impact in terms of public trust and confidence in some areas, but not others. So, you know, it's always been a bit of a false premise, really, that the key to successful policing is to have a large number of police officers on patrol. That's a very simplistic political approach, but it's been dominant in this country. I don't know why, but, you know, we want to move away from that and try and broaden the debate out in the ways that I outlined before.
And in terms of broadening it out, because you said those other things as well, to think about buildings, material culture and social media. So how did they come about? How did you come to select those three things?
Partly from our own interests, I suppose. I suppose the buildings part of it, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of really, really interesting work done in criminology and other subjects, disciplines in the last few years, looking at the nature of prison architecture, for example, looking at probation premises and the nature of the buildings and the premises used for probation work, and I guess it just seemed to us that policing was an area that strangely seemed not to have you know, the subject area in terms of academic interest seemed to be an area that hadn't looked at those issues, and that seemed to be a real gap, I think, to us, because it's such a visual aspect of the criminal justice system, policing. I mean, it's the public face of criminal justice in many respects, but that hadn't been hadn't been seen very much in terms of the research literature. Those particular visual components hadn't featured very strongly, and I don't know why that's the case, but that's the gap that we wanted to try and fill, I suppose. The other areas are things that we also want to draw attention to in terms of the material culture part of it. I've been interested and intrigued over a number of years, really, in the fact that the policing as an occupation and as a role in society, it's one of those roles and p- occupations that features very strongly in terms of all kinds of aspects of material popular culture, from children's toys to tourist trinkets. You know, you walk down the street in London and the tourist booths sell, you know, alongside pictures of Big Ben and Charles and Di, they sell, you know, they sell pictures and postcards of the Bobby and the Beat. You can buy plastic police helmets and, you know, as sort of souvenirs and things like that. And, you know, there aren't very many, there are some, but there aren't very many other occupations that are like that, I don't think.
And again, that's an interesting issue. Jump in terms of the history around that, do we know much about the kind of history around these things then, these material objects that exist? Is that a case that they've always existed over time? Has there always been this interest in terms of whether it's police hats, police uniforms, and the kind of appetite there?
Yeah, I suspect so. I don't know about some aspects of it. I don't know about toys, particularly children's toys. That would be an interesting thing to look at, the history of that. I think in terms of popular images, I mean, yeah, I think there's some evidence that that goes back at least to the kind of middle of the last century. I don't know about some of the wider issues of it. I suppose that's one of the things that we can look at.
Makes you kind of think, sort of think about cops and robbers. You know, we all play when we're kids, when we're younger, and it's kind of a game, and who decides who's going to be the cop and who's going to be the robber? In terms of the third theme then, so social media, so that's the third one.
Yeah, that's right.
It's going to be looked at.
Yeah, I suppose the point there is that there's been some, you know, really good work done around the way in which the police use social media, the different, you know, whether it's for crime detection, whether it's for public reassurance, whether it's for building a relationship with the community. You know, lots of those things have been looked at over the last 10 years or so, but maybe not so much focus in terms of the visual representation of police on you know, various social media platforms. That's one of the things we're going to be looking at as well, to try and, I suppose, amongst other things, to try and do some work with members of the public and other informants to try and understand, I suppose, whether or not that can form a kind of visual patrol function for police. Does it convey the same kind of ideas of trust and legitimacy that we might expect for some groups in society in terms of physical foot patrol?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I know in terms of my own research, which I think we're going to talk about in another podcast, but that kind of being visible and how they use social media was a really interesting conversation within the police. So it was the idea that we don't want it to be text heavy, and if it doesn't have a photo, then this won't get retweeted, it won't get shared, people won't engage with it. So there was this kind of recognition within the police, I know when I did my own research, that actually we need to be really visible in terms of how we use social media, and the kind of content that we produce has to be visible in itself. It can't just be text heavy, it can't just be listing information, it's got to actually include that infographics and so on. So yeah,
did they do that on the basis of any sort of understanding of what the public response, or was it just a hunch?
I think it was a hunch. I think it was possibly a bit of both. I think they felt that the content that was shared and engaged with the most was the visual content. So anything with a photograph, to give you an example, it was the idea that if we go to a road closure, then it's much better to take a picture of that road closure and get that on social media as opposed to just writing road closure. So actually having visual content along with it, and when you have that visual kind of side, which is interesting, in terms of they can have seen it reducing trying to reduce the text when you can.
So it was operationally useful as much as anything else?
Absolutely, yeah. It kind of fitted both. So just kind of, we were talking there about the police being the kind of public face in terms of what they see in terms of law and order, but also you touched on the kind of occupational culture side of things. So how are you going to explore these kind of two things in terms of the methodology then? What will that entail? What will that look like?
Well, we've got throughout the different components of the project, we've got this idea of the visual is, you know, front and centre to everything, really. So as I've just already outlined, it informs the kind of conceptual focus of the study, but it also informs the methodology. So we're going to use visual research methods in terms of getting citizens participating in data collection and using photographic methods to capture images of police premises and police properties of various kinds. So that will produce some data in itself. We'll use that for as well as data to be analysed and studied. We will also use that as information that we will use for focus group discussions with police and with the public. In terms of the material culture part of it, we want to recruit police officers to take part in kind of interviews about their occupational identity, whereby they will select and bring along to the session an image or an object that they feel is particularly significant in terms of their career and their occupational identity. And we want to use that as a starting point for a kind of biographical interview with those officers about their careers and what they see as the role of the police in contemporary society. And we will also then do something similar with members of the public, invite them to participate. And then the third part of it, the social media part, well, Liam, you tell us about that, because you're going to be involved, well, you're going to be involved in all of it, but you know more about the social media part of it than I do from your other work as well. So tell us what the approach will be.
Yes, the approach for social media, it's kind of ongoing just now. So we're going to, first of all, it's just a case of understanding what the police use of social media looks like in terms of how the police engage with citizens, the types of accounts, the nature of the accounts, most importantly, that do exist. So whether that's police officers themselves having accounts that are in their individual names, or whether it's force level accounts, it's accounts linked to police dogs and police horses, or crime reduction, and so on. So just now we're kind of auditing what types of accounts exist out there, which I think is really important. And this will then be used to kind of inform our next stage, which is actually the visual content that features on these accounts. So in terms of the visual content, we will be looking at how they use the accounts. So that will be whether it's emojis, videos, image content, and it will also be looking at the reaction to that from citizens as well. But again, I think, you know, using these unique methods, and in terms of the online analysis, which I don't think certainly from my own research, there's not been a lot of research that's kind of looked at that engagement on social media. A lot of it is about how the police use social media in terms of the type of content they produce, so whether it's pushing information about keeping people safe and road closures, as I kind of said to you before, whether it's trying to pull information back about this missing person, have you seen anything, can you let us know, and the kind of dialogue as well. But so most of the research we know is kind of based on those three different approaches. It's the kind of push, pull and dialogue parts, and I think this kind of study goes one step further than that in terms of looking at the engagement. So we're not just interested in terms of what the police are doing, but also how citizens respond and how they engage with the police. And yeah, the visual part will be really interesting. Again, I don't know what that will look like in terms of when we do the analysis, but I think that's possibly the really interesting thing, is in terms of how these kind of visual elements are used, and certainly in terms of the police, in terms of how they use visual content in different ways, I would imagine, for different kind of messages that they want to communicate. So yeah, they're very much ongoing, but it's that engagement side of things that's going to be really
in terms of the
us.
Engagement side of it. I mean, how do you factor in the fact that for large proportion of the population won't engage at all with the police through social media? They would prefer, and they may have other ways of engaging.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's really interesting. I guess that's kind of one of the things about social media, is in terms of, you know, in terms of who we see using social media. We know that most people use social media in their daily lives. Most people have access to the internet. I think that's the really interesting thing about technological and internet developments, is the idea that now everybody almost is on the internet, does use the internet daily, does use social media to some extent. So we're now in a situation where this kind of idea that people don't use the internet doesn't almost exist, and we're kind of a lot of people now do use social media and the internet. But yeah, in terms of the engagement with police accounts, again, we don't know who engages with the police. We don't know. We just don't know that just yet. But we'll also have other aspects to the research as well. So we're going to have interviews with communities as well, and I think it'll be these interviews with communities that will hopefully kind of throw up some of those issues and debates in terms of would they and how would they engage with the police. I just know from doing my own research that you know, when it was focus groups with younger people, there was a kind of real challenge in terms of them being seen to follow the police on social media, and certainly to engage with the police was a big no-no, because it was the, what happens if someone sees me, what happens if my friend sees that I'm engaging with the police. So again, it might kind of touch on those issues, which kind of, I think, further kind of highlights possibly some of the challenges to the police using social media in terms of who they can engage with as a result. So yeah, it's interesting that I think that will open it up hopefully as part of the research.
Yeah, it's a very broad area, very rich area, and I suppose you know, differences in terms of different platforms as well. I suppose we talk about social media in generic terms, but obviously it's you know, it may be important to distinguish between different platforms and different subsections of the population as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, most of the kind of the research that's out there does kind of suggest that you've almost got, you know, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, YouTube to an extent, Facebook and so on, and how they kind of, they target different audiences, or certainly different audiences use these platforms. So when I was doing my own research, it was the idea that younger people now aren't interested in Facebook, are kind of returning to Twitter, but really Instagram is the one for them, which is interesting for our project, because Instagram is absolutely about the visual. It's it's less about the text and more about the kind of what people can see and the images and the photos that people post online, but also just how people use social media. So I think the big thing recently has been young people and WhatsApp, and the idea that you will have these schools and that it's a whole year and they will have 200 people in a group chat, and that is how they communicate, and they all kind of contribute to this group chat in that way. So they're not interested in Facebook, they're not interested in Twitter. And also in terms of how they want to use social media, we see this idea that they actually don't want it to last forever. So whether it's Snapchat and it disappears, Instagram and it disappears, then that's something that they want, whereas we see older people kind of using Facebook and Twitter, which is the audience there, I would guess.
Yeah, so maybe there's a bit of the, you know, it reminds me of those discussions from, you know, from the relatively recent past about hard to reach and hard to hear communities, and how, you know, this was a real challenge for and other agencies, but for police to contact the very people they really wanted to contact was particularly difficult and challenging. And
absolutely,
what you've just said seems to suggest that might be an issue in the social media.
I think you're absolutely right, and especially with kind of police organisations, when it comes to technology, are quite rigid and stiff in terms of how they use it and what they're possibly willing to use as well. So we kind of see the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram coming into it now, YouTube they kind of use sporadically, but it seems to take more time and effort for the police to kind of maintain, because it's a case of creating videos and having regular content. So yeah, there are huge implications there for the police in terms of what platforms they use to communicate, and also how they communicate their message. So I remember talking, there was a kind of shift when I did my study, and it was about putting information about festival safety during the summer on Facebook, and they started off writing the kind of content, and it was aimed at a younger audience, but then they kind of said, wait a minute, this isn't going to be read by a younger audience, this is going to be read by your mum and dad, so actually we need to write this content with the target being your mum and dad, who will then pass on this information to the children themselves. So yeah, I think there's huge implications there for the police in terms of which platforms they use and who those messages will reach, but also then how they use those platforms and kind of recognising who their audience is on these platforms as well. So yeah, very, very important.
I'm also thinking, a consequence of, you know, the research might be that the police need to think much more carefully about how they train police officers and police staff in this, but also how they identify and appoint and recruit the most appropriate people to do it.
I think you're I think that's a fair point as well. It's just kind of, which again brings its own challenges to policing, which is a very kind of hierarchical organisation, and kind of, so it's possibly combating those kind of issues as well. But yeah, allowing the kind of perhaps junior rank, who there certainly is a perception that they kind of get social media more, or they're more to grips, which I would actually challenge as well. I know from my own research that actually it didn't matter what years of experience you were in the police or your age, but it was your appetite for social media, I think, is the most important thing. And I think we see that across age groups, that some people are more engaged with social media and some aren't, and it's about capturing those people as opposed to targeting, say, just junior officers, because they get social media. I think that's possibly false, and it's a case of capturing people who get it regardless of their age. So yeah, huge implications again for the police in terms of who they allowed to use, or who they allowed to use, because that would be the conversation within the police. But who uses,
that would be a police way of doing it.
Who uses social media? Yeah, is the important thing there.
Yeah.
So just in terms of, I mean, to kind of touch on as well for the methodology. So going back to the Visible Policing Project, the dissemination part's really interesting here, because I think it sounds like there's going to be a few things coming up.
Yeah. Again, we've got the whole the visual again. That's the other leg of this. I said before there were three components: the concept, the method, and then the dissemination, all relying on visual. So as well as having this obviously highly audio podcast, we will also have regular academic outputs, the journal articles and what have you, and some blog activity. But visually, I think what's one of the things that's exciting about the project is that we will have an exhibition of some of the photographic visual images that we collect, which we'll be putting together over the lifetime of the project. And at the end of the project, there will be an exhibition available for interested parties, whoever they might be, to hire out and to use. Details of that will become available in the fullness of time once we get the material together and plan out how to lend it to people. And then the other thing we're going to do is a documentary film. So we've had the pleasure of commissioning some documentary filmmakers over the last short few weeks, who will be working on a film about the project, looking at some of the key themes, some of the key outcomes, some of the key questions that we seek to address throughout the project. And that film will also be widely available sometime towards the end of 2020, early 2021. So this is a very early trailer for that film coming to a cinema near you soon.
Great, sounds good. So just to kind of finish on as well, what stage are we at with the project then, if you want to tell the audience, and just
well,
also
we've got
what are the
to
next
the,
press and things?
Yeah, we've got to the point now where we're about to begin the field work. So, Liam and I and Andrew and Matt will be travelling across the country in the next month or 6 weeks, conducting interviews with police officers about their visual representation of their occupation and their work. We will be looking for members of the public to contribute through taking photographs and sending them in to us via our website. We're also looking for people to take part in focus group discussions. So there's a whole range of things we'll be doing in terms of data collection over the next little while. We've spent some time sort of planning and preparing all of this, of course. So it'll be really nice to get out into the field and begin to make some of this come to life a little bit. And more information from about that will be on the website, we'll obviously talk about more of that on these in this series of podcasts as we come to it.
That's great. Thanks, Mike, for telling us a little bit about the project.
You're welcome, Liam. Thank you very much.
This podcast is produced as part of an Economic and Social Research Council funded study, Visible Policing. For more information, visit visiblepolicing.com.